Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Ben Cohen is a Jew who has gone where possibly no other Jew has gone before. He's a son of an Orthodox rabbi, and he spent a whole year visiting every brand of Christian community that he could find in his country, the US. His adventure took him from mosh pits to mountaintops to monasteries, just about everything in between. And Ben's aim, he says, wasn't to change religions, and it wasn't to criticize Christianity either, but to see what he could learn in order to become a better Jew. It's an interesting mission, huh? Well, Ben wrote a book about the experience called My Jesus Year, and he's with us now. Ben, welcome to Open House.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. It's quite a journey you went on. We'll want to explore that journey in just a minute. We need to touch on your background, though, first. You grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, in a very Jewish family. In fact, you say you come from a, quote, clan of rabbinic rock stars. Tell me about what does that mean?
Well, my father's a rabbi, and all my brothers are rabbis, and my sister's married rabbis. And so basically, I'm the only one that didn't go into the family business. I guess you'd call me the white sheep of the family.
Okay. You even had a synagogue in your home, too, didn't you?
That's true, yeah. My dad built a 1,000-square-foot synagogue next to our dining room. So I literally grew up inside a synagogue.
There you go. Was that a public synagogue, or was it just for the family?
No, it was a public synagogue. We had services there every Saturday.
Okay, so why didn't you follow in your dad and your brother's footsteps?
I guess I was the rebellious son. Just being a rabbi wasn't for me. I was still an Orthodox Jew. I still observed all, I kept kosher, I kept the Sabbath. It's not that I went off the path completely. I just didn't choose it, as a vocation. Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah, sure. Most non-Jews wouldn't realize the many detailed prayers and rituals that Jewish people actually incorporate into their day. Give us a bit of a rundown as to what you do as a practicing Orthodox Jew.
Yeah, like you said, it's a part of, every... part of every day, from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to bed, not an hour goes by where the fact that I'm Jewish doesn't play a role. For example, I have to recite a blessing before I eat any food. When I exit the restroom, I recite a blessing. There's a special way to put my shoes on in the morning. I mean, everything that I do throughout the day is dictated by the fact that I'm an Orthodox Jew. So it's something that it's inescapable for me.
And at one stage, you didn't really warm to that, did you? You said you were taught to wear a skull cap and follow all of these thousands of rules, and I think the quote was, I felt as if I was in a jail imprisoned by a faith that favors deed over creed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, Judaism is the legal-based religion. It's all about the laws. Do this, do that. And for me, I kind of felt that I was just thrown into the deep end of the religious pool and just told to do these things. And so it was a very unspiritual way to grow up, because I was only doing these things because I felt guilty and because I was told to do them like a robot, but I was never doing them because I chose to do them. So that always gnawed at me.
Mm. Is that a common experience for Jewish young people?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I'm certainly not the only person to feel that way. It's a common, it's a common practice where kids are told, it's a problem when you have a religious parents. They obviously want to bestow the religiosity on their children, but at the same time, and this is what my book talks about, is at the same time you don't want to oppress them. You want them to be able to choose religion on their own. Otherwise, they're going to come to resent it. So there's a balance you have to meet.
Mm. So was there ever a time where you really kind of doubted not just your religion, but maybe even the existence of God altogether?
I don't think I ever, no. I never went to that far an extreme. It could just be, being religious is in my blood. It's just it's part of my DNA, part of who I am. So I never actually started thinking about whether or not there's a God. It was more of a question of how do I become more spiritual? How do I get more jazzed about my Judaism? Mm. What can I do to get excited about it? Because doing all these things is not exciting me.
Mm. What made you then start this year-long spiritual investigation into Christianity? How did you think that might be one of the answers to that question of how you can become more, quote, jazzed about your Judaism?
Yeah, it's a question I get asked most often. Well, growing up in the Bible Belt in the United States, there are churches on every street corner. There's probably more churches than Starbucks. Some street corners have two churches. And so they're all over the place. And I noticed growing up that every Sunday morning the parking lots are always full. And synagogues in America are not always full on the weekends. For the holidays or for a bar mitzvah, they're full. But on most weekends, they're not full. So I was curious what are they doing in there that's so much, for lack of a better word, fun, that I could learn? And maybe I could go and tap into that spirituality and bring something back to enhance my own religion.
Mm. This is Open House. We're talking to Benjamin Cohen. He's written a book called My Jesus Year, an Orthodox Jew who went on a bit of a tour of American Christianity to see just what he just said there, you know, how it might actually jazz up his Judaism himself. A fascinating journey. Theopenhouse.net.au is the website for the podcast from tomorrow afternoon onwards. So let's talk about that journey then, because you went, even putting spiritual questions aside, I mean, the journey that you went on is a fascinating cultural snapshot into the diversity of Christian faith expressions that you actually find in your country, isn't it? Tell us about some of the more colorful experiences that you had.
Sure. I mean, growing up, all I knew was us and them. I knew Jews and Christians. I had no clue that there were different denominations of Baptist and Catholic and Pentecostal, and I just didn't know any of that existed. And so this year kind of opened my eyes to that. Like you said, I did some real colorful stuff. I went to something called Ultimate Christian Wrestling, mm-hmm. which is it's an evangelical event where they have good wrestlers fight evil wrestlers in the name of Jesus.
Kind of good quote and bad quote.
They're
dressed up, are they? It's a bit of a pantomime kind of thing.
Well, it's just like, you know, the wrestling you would watch on television, the fake wrestling you'd watch on television. It's like a soap opera. There are storylines, and there's the hero, and there's the villain. And it's a similar concept here, except here it's, you know, overweight men in tights in a church gymnasium.
It's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, we've got nothing like that in Australian Christianity. I think I can see how it's come about because, you know, Christians like me who are, you know, evangelical in their outlook want to share this story of Jesus with anybody. And, you know, we say, well, here's a community of people that I can connect with. I'm not particularly me personally when it comes to wrestling, but, you know, I'm a wrestler or whatever. I'm interested in this. Let's kind of start something within it. I've got to say, though, that those of us who look at that from a distance do wince a little bit.
Right. Well, I'm sure. Yeah. When I speak about this at churches, they wince and they're like, oh, no, like that's part of us. Yeah. But, I mean, part of what was fascinating to me on an anthropological level was how Christians market themselves to the public. And I think Christians do an amazing job of doing that. And so you can have such a variety of events. For those people who are interested in wrestling, we have something for you. Like, Judaism doesn't have that. It's really just within the confines of the synagogue walls. And so there's a lot, I think, Judaism and other religions as well can learn from that type of mass marketing outreach.
Others have actually raised that maybe that's part of the problem with Western Christianity. Maybe it's almost lost a little bit of a sense of holy ground, really. Let's not mess around too much. Let's not attach the name of God, indeed the name of Jesus, to trinkets and passing fads.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great debate that's going on right now. Mm. Is, you know, water? Should we water it down and go out to those people, or should we, you know, keep it sacred? You know, I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, you're raising the questions, I guess. So what else did you experience? You went to a few mega churches?
Yeah, I went to a few mega churches. Here in Georgia, they have one of the biggest mega churches in America, and it has 22,000 members. And on a typical Sunday, they actually get about 15,000 people show up. Mm. And on Easter, they have the largest Easter service in America. It's 70,000 people. Mm. They have to rent out the sports stadium for that.
Yeah.
But it was pretty crazy. I mean, I was certainly the only Jewish person there. I got there, and they welcomed me when I got there that first day. And they said, we'd like to welcome our Jewish friend, Ben Cohen. And it was probably the only time I've been referred to as someone's Jewish friend. And, you know, they have these large screens at mega churches so that people can see what's going on, large television screens. And so there, the cameras came zooming in on my face, you know, my little Jewish face on Jesus' Jumbotron for everybody to see. Mm. I was a little worried what my rabbinic father would think after that.
I bet so. Well, that raises a very good point. How did your family and, indeed, your Jewish community, your rabbi, feel about you going on this trek into Christian churches and things?
Well, it's an interesting point you bring up, because I was taught growing up in an Orthodox household that I was never allowed to actually walk into a church. It was off limits. And especially during prayer services, I certainly wasn't allowed to go in. And so before I went on this journey, I actually had to ask my rabbi for permission. And he gave me permission on two conditions. He said, number one, I have to wear my skull cap at all times so that people knew I was Jewish. Mm-hmm. And number two, since I'm a journalist, he wanted me to wear my press badge so that people knew I was a member of the press and that I was there to observe and report and not necessarily to participate in the prayers themselves.
Right. Okay. Okay, now that's interesting because you did participate in the sense you actually went to a Catholic confession.
Well, that's right. You caught me there. That was the one. That was probably the one thing I did during the year where I participated and I pretended not to be Jewish and I actually went to confession, which was a very scary experience for me. Mm-hmm. But since the publication of the book, I've come to find out that the priest I gave confession to actually has given the book to his congregants as a gift. So after the fact, I know he's approved of it.
Now, how did you do that, though? I mean, how did you go to Catholic confession when Catholic confession is for baptized Catholics?
Yeah. Well, I spoke through, you know, everywhere I went, I kind of had a guide. You know, I found a friend who belonged to that denomination who helped guide me through that denomination. So for Catholicism, I have a friend and who's Catholic, and I asked him, and he said, you can't go to confession, just like you said, but I'll sneak you in. That's what he said. So I figured if he's going to sneak me in, it'll be on his conscience. And so, you know, he'll have to confess for that. So he helped me practice, you know, all the stuff I was supposed to say, forgive me, Father, for I've sinned, the whole thing. And he took me down to his church. So he kind of snuck me in. So he told me how to act and, you know, how to play the role.
And you don't, your conscience doesn't have any twinge about that at all?
No, it absolutely did. And I struggled with it. And I write in the book about how I struggled with it. But like I said, now after the fact, I've come to find out that the priest was okay with it after the fact. So.
Yeah. Fascinating. We're talking to Ben Cohen. He's written a book called My Jesus Year. He's a Jew, and he went on an excursion of American Christianity, kind of wondering what maybe that experience could teach him about his own faith. Okay, so you went to all of these different Christian expressions, baseball faith days, and you even had some time with some monks in a monastery. And what was your overall impression of what you saw of Christianity in the U.S.? What was your overall impression?
My overall impression was very inspiring. At each place I went to, at each church, or even if it was something as crazy sounding as wrestling, I learned something at each place, and I took that with me. For example, I went to an Episcopal church across the street from my home many times throughout the year because I felt really close with them. Because Episcopal churches, compared to like a mega church, they do the same things every week. It's the same prayer, the same rituals, and the same, and it's a set service. And for me, I enjoyed that, and I came to realize, why am I enjoying the ritual? And I realized, oh, of course, I have this in my own religion.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of, you know, I totally forgot about that up until that point. It made me appreciate my own Judaism more. The book is a love letter to Christians because they've reignited that spark inside of me to look at my religion with fresh eyes.
Mm. Was there anything that you saw that you didn't like?
I'll say that with a caveat first. About 90% of what I saw was positive, and probably about 10% was not. I went to a Pentecostal tent revival service. It was like a healings and miracle service where people in wheelchairs were dancing at the end of the night. And I felt the person who was leading it was a bit of a charlatan and taking advantage of some of these sick people who were there who were looking for medical help.
Mm.
So that I had a little bit of a negative feeling towards, but most of what I saw was very positive.
Mm. Actually, I read a bit of that particular chapter, and you were talking about this preacher the more extreme end of the revivalist Pentecostalism, where he was talking about, you know, people receiving gold fillings in their mouth miraculously and gold stardust and all of those kinds of things.
Yeah, it was a little weird. They were selling healing oil in the lobby also of that service.
Yeah. Of course, and I'm sure you know this, that not all Pentecostalism is like that.
No, of course not. I don't want to... I don't want people... I feel bad. I know when I talk about these things, like you said before, people wince because, oh, that's... I would feel the same way if a Christian came and wrote a book about Judaism and talked about some of the strange stuff that we do, and we do strange stuff. I certainly would wince at that as well.
At one stage, you also mentioned about a shofar being blown as well.
Right. Well, that was another thing that I noticed in a lot of these evangelical churches, especially, was they were giving Old Testament sermons. They were bringing in a shofar, like you said. They had Hebrew posters on the wall. I mean, I didn't realize to what extent that they were so fascinated with my, you know, in a certain sense that they were fascinated with my religion and with Hebrew and with the Old Testament.
Mm.
And, you know, especially here we have a lot of Christian Zionists who, you know, love Israel more than I do sometimes. You know, my wife's grandmother is a Christian Zionist.
Mm.
And
we should just explain that that means that somebody who actually believes that, you know, Jesus will literally return to Jerusalem, the actual place, and so politically very much aligned with Israel owning the land.
Yeah, I mean, here in the States, the Christian Zionists are you know, at the forefront of strengthening America's ties with Israel and keeping Israel safe and all those kinds of things. So, you know, she follows the news about Israel, you know, more than I do, and it's always fascinating to speak with her. So, I mean, it was nice just to be exposed to these kinds of people who look at religion without cynicism.
Yes.
You know, in my synagogue, especially where I go, there's so many cynics in synagogue, myself included. And you know, it was nice to be around people who just go for the pure sake of going and being in a house of worship.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for what it's worth, I recently spent 8 months studying through the book of Exodus.
Uh-huh.
So, does that make us good friends?
Yeah, we're already good friends.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, really, as a Christian, you really can't understand the life, mission, message of Jesus unless you actually understand what we call the Old Testament, what you call the Tanakh. You just can't understand it. So that's why. I mean, yes, one of the wonderful historical events that are all part of what we believe is salvation history, the one true God actually choosing Abraham, choosing, of course, Noah before that, but choosing Abraham to... start a movement that would reclaim the world for himself.
Yeah. I mean, I thought, you know, the Jews had the Old Testament and the Christians had the New Testament. I didn't realize until this journey that Christians also have the Old and the New.
Mm.
You know, many churches I went to, they gave Old Testament sermons. Some of them were the same sermon I heard in synagogue the day before. And I even told my rabbi, I said, you know, this minister gave a much better sermon on the same topic.
Oh, he would have loved you. Yeah, that's the end of your little excursionary tour of U.S. Christianity. Take your journalist badge off and take your skull cap off.
Exactly.
So, Ben, of course, through this, you know, what did you hear about the person of Jesus as you were visiting these churches and exploring these faith expressions?
I always looked at Jesus, you know, at least what I thought was that people looked at him as the Son of God, and I think, you know, people do, but going to church and spending a year with Christians, they also look at him as I didn't realize the extent to which they look at him as a divine figure, as if, you know, he's a God himself, and that people were worshiping Jesus. That was very strange for me. In Judaism, we don't have that intermediary. We have prophets like Moses and Joshua, but we don't worship or we don't pray to them. You know, they're not our intermediary, so to speak. So that was just a different paradigm shift for me to see in Christians' relationship with Jesus, whether it was in church or even in, you know, Christian music. You know, Jesus' name is just so prominent. And so that was just, you know, and then you look at Christian pop culture and you see dolls of Jesus and board games about Jesus. And again, all these kinds of things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And during your studies or during your journey, did you actually read any of the New Testament? Was that part of your research?
I did not do this from an academic, you know, point of view, I should say. You know, it was very much from an anthropological, journalistic, personal journey. So I didn't say the only New Testament I studied was, you know, in church if they were talking about a specific, you know, verse or paragraph. That was really my only exposure to that.
Yes. Okay. So was there anything, you know, that I'm going to ask this as being a Christian? You know that I'm going to ask you this. Was there anything that you heard as you were sitting in those churches, hearing all of those sermons? Anything that you heard about Jesus that got you interested to think, well, maybe this could be the promised Messiah that the Hebrew scriptures have always pointed towards, Deuteronomy 18, all of the other scriptures that point towards the coming Messiah?
It didn't, and it was because my mind was not open to that part of the experience. You know, like I said at the beginning, being Jewish is part of my DNA. Being Jewish has to do with so many aspects, like I said, of my life, from what I wear to what I eat. It has, you know, almost very little to do with who I pray to. It has to do with all the deeds, like you mentioned before, all the deeds that I do.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone to come up to me and say, from a theological point of view, but do you see what it says in Deuteronomy, or do you understand this contradicts that, or whatever it was, my mind wasn't even looking at that. My mind was looking at it from a much more basic, primitive, so to speak, spiritual level.
Mm. And so do you await the coming Messiah that is prophesied in the Hebrew Scriptures? Is that something that you and your because there's a number of branches of Judaism, of course. Is that you and your particular branch of Judaism still await?
I think so. I mean, it's not something that I think about on a daily basis, certainly. But I think from a theological point of view, yeah, I mean, we're waiting for the Messiah to come, and then we'll have the world to come, you know, where people, where it's a whole, you know, there's no war, there's no violence, and it's a, you know, it's a much better, a peaceful world to live in.
Those beautiful passages you find in Isaiah, Isaiah 22 and 35 and 65 and 66, and all of those beautiful pictures of the lion lying down with the lamb.
Right. Yeah. You know, we, you know, there's a custom in Judaism when someone passes away that some people like to be buried in Israel. And one of the reasons they do that is because they, because we know that when Messiah comes, we're all going to be transported, you know, I'll put that in quotes, transported to the Holy Land. And so people who pass away, they want to be close. You know, they want to be at the Holy Land already, so it's not a long trip for them. So there's a lot of people who, like my mother who passed away, we actually buried her in Israel for that reason.
Right. Wow. I'm really interested in your openness to actually share that you weren't open to hearing about. I really appreciate that honesty. That you weren't open to actually, I guess, thinking things through theologically, even though you did say you were looking to somehow have your own faith revitalized. Because of course there are Messianic Jews. There are actually Jews who have said, you know, we have found the returned Messiah in the person of Jesus. They haven't let go of their Jewish heritage or their Jewish culture at all, but they find that he is actually the fulfillment. What would it take for you to be open to look at the claims of Christ in that regard?
Well, here's the situation is, I know deep down inside that I need to keep kosher and keep the Sabbath and do all these things. So if you were to say to me, believe in Jesus and don't do those things, because Messianic Jews do not do those things to the extent that Orthodox Jews do.
Yeah.
So I am going to be doing these things till the day I die because that's just who I am. Mm-hmm. And so nothing you can say intellectually or whatever would ever change that, because it has nothing to do with intellectualism. It has to do with who I am. I have two arms, two feet, and I keep kosher and keep the Sabbath. They're all the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So intellectually, you could never say something, oh, but you have three arms, because it's not true. I don't have three arms. So that's so if you were to say to me, do everything you're doing, keep kosher, keep the Sabbath, and then believe in Jesus, what does that even mean, believe in Jesus? I certainly believe Jesus. I believe he existed. I believe he's your God. I don't disagree with the fact that you worship him, and I think he's a holy person, and you worship him, and I have no problem with that. So, I mean, what does that even mean, though, to accept Jesus? How would it change my daily existence of keeping kosher and keeping the Sabbath?
Yeah.
And praying three times a day.
I'm
saying it's a real practical thing for me rather than an intellectual thing.
Yeah, right, yeah. And no doubt, I mean, Jesus was, you know, considered to be the fulfillment of the law and the prophets. And so, yes, there is a sense in which those laws, I guess, to be right with the Almighty are all, we believe as Christians, have actually all been fulfilled in Jesus' death for our sins. He was the ultimate sacrificial lamb who paid for our sins. And by, yes, accepting him, believing in him that he paid for those sins, we don't have to do those things. That's the Christian idea. And so, yes, some of those rituals, Christians would then say, are no longer necessary because we're already right with God.
Right.
So what you're saying is, but that's so interwoven with your DNA, you'd find that hard to let go.
I mean, if you did something your entire life, let's say every day when you woke up, you did X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're 40 years old, and you've done it for 40 years. And someone were to say to you, believe in this thing I'm telling you about, and once you believe in this, you no longer have to do X, Y, and Z. It's not an option for you, because you're doing X, Y, and Z because that's what you've done your whole life. It has nothing to do with why you're doing it. You've done X, Y, and Z, and you're doing it. There's no reason why you're doing X, Y, and Z.
Mm.
And someone were to say, well, I'm going to give you a coupon that says you no longer have to do X, Y, and Z. You wouldn't necessarily even want that coupon.
Okay. I love these conversations, Ben, and I appreciate the fact that you're open to talking about them. Because that's what we like to do on this program, is actually talk to a variety of different people and explore these kinds of things. When you were to wrap it all up, big lessons, ultimate things that you took away from that big Jesus year that you had, what were they?
Well, really, I mean, like I said before, hanging out with people who were not cynical about religion was probably the biggest thing for me. Because as Orthodox Jews, like, you know, because it's so ingrained in us, it all becomes second nature. Like, for example, like you said, I grew up with a synagogue in my house. So for me, synagogues were not special. We had the dining room, we had the kitchen, we had the synagogue. It's not a special place. I compare it to, like, President Obama's daughters, when they go into the West Wing or the Oval Office, it's not a big deal for them. But if you or I were to go, it would be the highlight of our year. So for me, synagogue was the same thing. It wasn't special. And so seeing it through their eyes, seeing how this is a very religious, spiritual experience. This is a house of worship. This is where we talk, we have a conversation with the divine. And so for me, it was just kind of like waking me out of my spiritual slumber, so to speak, and saying, you know, wake up and look, this is a very holy place and don't take it for granted.
All right. Well, I've so enjoyed our chat, Ben. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. I enjoyed it as well.
Yeah. Benjamin Cohen, his name is. And the book is called My Jesus Year, an Orthodox Jew who went on a bit of an anthropological tour of American Christianity and all of its interesting flavors to find out what it might do for his own faith.
We hope you enjoy this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.